SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again?
With Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Does that blow your mind?
That just happened.
Welcome back, everybody. It's hour three of In This League on the Sprint. Get on the group. Follow me on the Twitter at Bogman Sports, and I'm joined by my friend John Lobb. You can follow him on the Twitter at GridironSkull91. Johnny, what is going on?
You know, I've noticed that I'm on the grid more than at any other time in the last 15 years because of COVID. I spend far too much time on the grid, but at least now I'm on the grid with you. So I'm very happy about that, my friend.
That's right. So, look, man, you know, we've got a lot to talk about today. And, you know, you and I do the CFF podcast for Fantrax. You have been playing college fantasy football before language was invented. I have been playing college fantasy football since the Stone Age. So we've been playing this for a long time. We have CFF on campus. I've got In This League, the CFF show over there. And, you know, all of this news that's coming out about college football looks dire. You know, it's probably not going to be as bad as it looks, or maybe, because, you know, and I've talked about this with Bubba and with a lot of people. What I can't stand is everyone saying just cancel the season already. But with college football, I said this to the Welsh on this show about a month ago. I am most afraid of college football getting the season canceled way more than I am for the NFL, because you don't have anyone representing the players as a whole. And if you're going to say that students can't come back to campus, how are you going to say student athletes should come back? So today, as you know, we're firing up here, and of course, I just wrapped up a CFF show with Nick, and we didn't have this information, but now it looks like the Big Ten is going to announce a conference-only schedule. The ACC is joining suit with them. So, you know, it seems like these are going to be the dominoes to fall. I know the ACC has also said they will have no sports until September 1st, which wouldn't impact football because the games don't start until after September 1st. But we're lowering the games from 12 to 10, it looks like. All the non-conference schedules are going out the window outside of maybe Notre Dame for some schools. So just your initial thoughts on the viability of this, the college football season, and these conferences going to conference only play.
So I think you just mentioned one of the most important aspects of this. The myth of college football is that they are amateurs, and we can discuss how that myth started. There's a lot of historical research I've done, but that's for another show of another day. But if we want to continue to discuss this myth while college football teams make hundreds of millions of dollars, and that's a whole nother story, but you cannot separate the student athlete from student. If you want to even pretend to be an amateur sport still, you cannot possibly bring athletes onto campus while you tell the remaining students that they must stay home for their own safety. If you do that, you are therefore then saying, we are a professional sports organization here for profit only. And it takes away the entire myth, the illusion that they are actually here for anything else other than to make money.
Now, are you thinking that, you know, because I think we kind of have to go this direction now, that every conference is going to lean into this conference only schedule, at least for now?
Absolutely. I think it's a good compromise at this point. Now, I have hope. We know that the curve has gone up, and we know states, there are hot spots that are exploding. But I believe the people on the ground are starting to understand what is happening. So I'm hopeful that within 6 to 8 weeks, we can begin to flatten that curve like New York City did, the Northeast did. It's possible. We know what we have to do. Once we do that and the schools feel safe, they can then proceed. Now, you mentioned it, a 10-game schedule is much more compact. You can get rid of the bye week. You could play it. It's more local oriented, right? So you can get on buses per se instead of driving. You can have your athletes do online learning. So this does make it more manageable by far than getting on a plane for 2 or 3 days in a hotel room. So, and you could easily postpone the season. There are a lot of different options, Scott, but I think this is a good start to say, let's play 9 or 10 conference games only, and let's see where we can go, where we can keep our athletes safe, our student athletes, and let's have a season.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously I think the season would be pushed back probably to the beginning of October.
I think that's a best case scenario.
Yeah.
October seems like a good, hey, if we do as a society and we do the right things, that seems reasonable at this point.
The only thing I'm afraid of, and we were talking about this a little bit off air, is, you know, I know that Arizona is spiking right now, which, you know, the mantra of this state when this initially happened was our heat is going to burn up COVID. And, that is not happening. But what I think we're seeing with the spike is not only, you know, we were one of the first states to, you know, let everybody start going back to work and opening up restaurants and bars and things like that. We pretty much opened everything except for stadiums and movie theaters. So that has been ratcheted back a little bit. But I think the big thing out here is in Arizona right now, it's a lot like it is in the Northeast in December, you know, where, you know, the sun is out and you can go to the pool and stuff. But most of the time, what people want to do is stay inside. You know what I mean? Yeah. Most people want to stay inside because it's too hot. Just like in the Northeast in the winter months, it gets too cold and everybody stays inside. And that's when you see flu season kick up in most spots. I think that's kind of what's happening in Arizona. Now, I'm not an epidemiologist or anything like that. I don't know if that is involving in the case. You know, it seems like a lot of it is, you know, correlated to people being stupid and, you know, going to pool parties and going to bars and going to large events and not wearing a mask and stuff like that. So who knows what, you know, just this state is going through where I'm at. But, you know, I'm a little afraid of an October start because, you know, the most important games we'll be playing in the winter when we could possibly see a second wave in your neck of the woods in the Northeast. So it seems like, you know, the best case scenario is October for a lot of this stuff, but spring ball is an option. And Lincoln Riley was asked about it earlier this week, and he said, I don't see a problem with spring ball at all. But the issue that has been brought up, and Nick brought this up on the ITL CFF podcast as well, is the, you know, the draft. The NFL has said, the NFL, first of all, has acted like until the last week is acting like COVID doesn't exist. They're like, yeah, we'll do our draft just in a basement. You know, that's fine. Ah, we'll just skip OTAs. You know what I mean? So there have been things that said that pretty much no one is getting any instruction from the league on what to do about this. You know, it's just kind of non-existent is what they've been saying. But college football, I think you're right. The first step in the, you know, the best step I think we can hope for is all conference schedules starting in late September, early October, something like that. And that's where the season goes, because if we do get spring ball and the draft doesn't move back and they're playing games while the draft is happening, what incentive do players that get drafted have to keep playing football for their college team once they know they're going to get at least a rookie contract? So I don't know, man. That seems like a kind of a bad idea for college football unless they can start early next year in January. And, you know, from what you've told me, the weather doesn't really get playable until middle of February or something like that, right?
If they wanted to play in January in the Northeast, and we're looking at Boston College per se, UConn, Rutgers, you know, I'm trying to think. Well, Syracuse is inside. Yeah. Penn State, Pittsburgh. In January, there's a very good chance that it's 30 degrees out with wind chill and snow. So, you know, who knows if the players and the universities are willing to do that. And I'll tell you this, the fans coming to the games are going to be minor compared to what they're getting on a September or October day. Now, I'll give you a scenario. Because I live in New Haven, the Ivy League only plays basically a conference schedule. I think they have one other game because they're FCS level. They don't kick off till the last week of September. And the final game is always the Thanksgiving weekend, Harvard versus Yale, the big rivalry game. So there is a window there that the Big Ten, Pac-12 could all follow as far as doing just a conference schedule. Like, there is a little window there. But, I, you know, maybe you're looking at a February 1st start date and rearranging. Scott and I were talking about this off the phone. Maybe you have to rearrange that the Northern clubs go further south early and the Southern teams come up here, you know, around early April or late March, because then you're into the 40 degree weather. It could be rainy. It could be sloppy, but you're not going to have 30 degrees with, you know, 10 degrees wind chill.
And, so there is the potential for snow and a bad stadium. Like, the grass is also bad in a lot of those stadiums.
I didn't even think of it. You're right. So the grass is bad by December, let alone in February. Yeah, it would basically mud in some. You'd be playing on dirt like the 1950s in the NFL. Just basically green dirt. We're going to paint it green. You're playing on dirt. That's what they used to do.
Yeah, man. So it's, you know, look, it's, and we're recording this about 25 minutes after the ACC and the Big Ten have kind of made these announcements. They're not official announcements yet, even, but this is what is being reported. So it's just a matter of time till the ACC commissioner and Big Ten commissioner come out and say this, and a lot of the other commissioners follow suit. So, you know, I don't mean to be in a panic or depressing sounding, but, like, you know, the NFL makes way more sense to play games early because, or on time at least, because they have a union representing the players. So everything is going to get straightened out before going into the season. Things are going to be agreed upon. You know, whether it works or not is still to be seen, and all that stuff. But, you know,
plus they are being paid and they're men. There's a difference between a 25-year-old adult making $3 million and a 19-year-old kid on a college campus. Like,
Card. Well, what are you talking about, John? That's the same thing. He can go to the cafeteria whenever he wants. I'm sure it'll be open, right?
Yeah. So. Oh, my. We have even discussed, like, how do you know every cafeteria worker is going to be comfortable? I mean, there's a lot of things going on here. I mean, cafeteria workers, who knows where they stand? And I'll say, as a teacher, a lot of cafeteria workers probably take care of their children. So there's a lot of things that have to be, a lot of shareholders and stakeholders on these campuses that people aren't thinking about.
Well, everyone's talking about a vaccine. We just need to get testing right, because we're running out of tests in this country already, because, you know, the numbers are spiking so high. And you and I joked about it, but I seriously would like to look into the viability of the Notre Dame testing. And the reporting has been wonky as well. Like, you know, I read that, you know, UNC suspended all sports activity this week because 37 players popped for COVID. But what I also heard was, well, it's 37 players out of the 500 they tested among all sports. It wasn't just the football.
Oh, was it just football?
And I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've heard, you know. But, you know, there's so many, you know, people want to call it fake news or whatever, or just clipped headlines and things of that nature going on all over the place. Who knows? But all we know is that we've seen, you know, you know, whatever, 20 Alabama kids, 30 at Texas, you know, 17 at Iowa, you know, just all these different. I'm just making these numbers up. Like, you know, they're all over the place. There hasn't been one team that hasn't that has tested players that hasn't had one come up except Notre Dame.
Which, like you said on the podcast last night, there's something funny going on there.
Let's check that equipment. Maybe it ain't working right. Like, go to someone you know has COVID and test them and see if it comes up. And in baseball, there were other ones. Joey Gallo tested positive and then went to a private lab and tested negative. So, the testing really needs to get straightened out before a lot of these seasons are going. And baseball is having the issue of not getting their tests turned around in time, too. So, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on with COVID right now. And it's, you know, we're all desperate for sports, and I want it more than anyone I know. So I'm so sick of rewatching the same shows on Netflix and Hulu and all that stuff. I just want some live sports, you know.
I know.
I agree.
Just try to be reasonable. I just try to look at what's happening. I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer. This isn't good right now.
Yeah, it's not good. So, you know, we'll see what happens. The NFL, like we said, a much more viable option to play because, you know, you can sign waivers. You can take your risk and all that stuff. And it's a little harder to contain because there are so many people involved in football. You know, you have your 55 man roster ish somewhere in that neighborhood. Usually it's 53. I think they might be expanding it for this year. Plus coaches and staff, and some of those, some of the coach and staff are guys that are in the high risk range as well. So are you going to get replacements? Are they going to be able to follow protocol? The NFL teams have cafeteria workers during camp and all that stuff.
How many NFL coaches are over 55 with high blood pressure, which is
probably all of them in the NFL, you know,
have high blood pressure,
regardless of their age, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a stressful job.
Yeah. And then my son and I were talking about this. Wade Phillips was in his 70s last year with the Rams. Cause we're Bronco fans. We like Wade Phillips. He's gotta be a high risk. Right. I mean, there's a lot of old. Now I understand
the NBA was trying to keep Mike D'Antoni away from the sideline because he's almost 70 years old. So, they worked that all out. So he's going to be there and they're playing in the bubble, which is, you can put 15 man roster, 17 man roster in a bubble. You can't do it with a 53 man. So, but look, we're not going to be Debbie Downer this whole time. I've got some great player debates for John that we're going to have coming up after this break. I'm excited to get to those. So stick with us. We're going to cheer up right after this break. It's In This League on the Sports Grid. Stick with us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Why the f*** is it called a...
In This League.
Because who could be scared of it?
In This League.
Yeah, just this nice bloke from down the road, isn't he?
What's wrong with you?
Hello, I'm...
In This League.
I've just moved in. My wife has got varicose veins.
I'm having a heart attack. I'm having a heart attack.
You're not having an heart attack.
Welcome back. It's hour three of In This League on the Sports Grid. Get on the grid. You know, John and I were talking about our just overall depression of what's going on with the college football season right now. So, look, we're gonna turn the page here. There's some stuff going on in the NFL that is very, very interesting. But I want to talk some player debates. And, rankings are getting looked at right now. Fantasy pros probably getting a lot of clicks because the NFL seems like they're just full bore. They may be canceling some preseason games. But damn it, it looks like they're going to have a season come hell or high water. You know, they are ratcheting back the guys that can come into camp as far as the numbers go and stuff like that. So it looks like they're just bound and determined to make this season happen. Did you see this stupid rule, John, about the the post game and not being able to exchange jerseys and all that crap.
I did hear that on the radio when I was driving home today from my parents' house. Yeah, they can't exchange jerseys. I don't think you're allowed to interact with the other team after the game also. Basically, you have to go straight from what it sounded like, and I haven't read the details because I literally heard about 2 hours ago. It looks like you're going straight to your locker room with no interaction with anyone else.
You just spent an hour running into each other and sweating and coughing on each other. But God forbid you stop and talk to them and exchange a jersey. I don't know. It just seems like, a purposeless rule. You know what I mean? Like if you want to say, hey, look, if you haven't touched the field, you go straight back to the locker room, something like that. Okay. Because you've kept your exposure down and you don't want to then expose yourself to new people. But if you've already been out, you know, if Lamar Jackson exchanges a jersey with, Kyler Murray or whoever, you know what I mean? Like, those guys have both been on the field the whole game.
If you're the third string quarterback and you're holding the clipboard, okay, you go.
Get your ass in the locker room. You know, don't interact with people that you don't have to. I understand that, but these guys are sweating and spitting and smashing into each other for 60 minutes, and then don't take his shirt home because that's gross. Whatever you say. No fun league. So absolutely. But John, I have some player debates and I really am excited to hear your take on these guys. So we're going to start. I have them kind of in descending orders as far as where they are on the Fantasy Pros ranks, but we're going to stick to PPR leagues because that's what I play the most in. Is that what you play the most in for the NFL is PPR?
I would definitely say 85% now are PPR or half point. I basically eliminated standard leagues. Unfortunately, my league of 32 years, the owners will not change the scoring system. So I'm stuck. And they're my great friends for 30, right? So I got to keep it, but I don't join any new standard leagues.
So let's go PPR here. And let's just talk a couple first round running backs and Dalvin Cook versus Derrick Henry. Obviously, Derrick Henry with the breakout year last year. It seems like when you finally have an OC willing to hand him the ball 25 times a game, he starts to wear down those defenses in the fourth quarter and rip off those big runs. So I'm a big Derrick Henry fan. I'm a bigger Dalvin Cook fan, but he does have the threat of a potential holdout there as well. So what are you doing between these two players in your ranking? Sean, are you going Derrick Henry? Or are you going Dalvin Cook?
If I was drafting today, and we're going to have more information through the month of August, but drafting today, I'm still going Dalvin Cook. Now, I moved him down to number 5 amongst my running backs, but Cook is still there. The system is perfect. He's a pass-catching dynamic back for the Minnesota Vikings. However, I understand there is potential for a holdout. I'm probably not taking him within the first 6 or 7 picks of a fantasy draft. Derrick Henry, I have him at the background of the first round. I love Derrick Henry. There's no question. And it was funny. I remember someone, and I'm just going to digress, a numbers nerd who once made the argument that there is no proof that big backs wear down defenses. And I said, you know what? I watched football for 40 years. If you haven't seen Jerome Bettis, John Riggins, Derrick Henry, there are literally defensive players in the fourth quarter who tackle. They can't tackle them. They won't tackle them. I don't care what your numbers say.
You watch that. Okay, go back. We can take a specific game. I think
go ahead.
2018, Thursday Night Football, Titans, Jaguars, right?
Yeah.
And you can see these dudes don't want to, and it's not even into the fourth quarter. It's early in the game. These dudes don't want to step in front of Derrick Henry because he is enormous and he is laying the wood to these guys. So it's ridiculous.
I hate that argument because I'm like, if you watch football, I'm just going to give one last story. The time I realized this, my dad was telling me I was young and we were watching the Cowboys and Redskins, 1979. And I remember Riggins ripped off like a 45-yard touchdown in Dallas to put the Redskins up by 13 over Dallas, right? And I was all psyched. He's like, they got Roger Staubach's son. And believe it or not, Roger Staubach won the game. But I said, why is Riggins so good? And my dad's like, John, you can't tackle guys like him in the fourth quarter. And I've just seen it too many times in my life. And that's the Jaguars wanted nothing to do with Derrick Henry in the fourth quarter.
Look, maybe the argument can be made just overall defenses are tired in the fourth quarter. Like, yeah, I'll take that argument before I'll take, you know, like if he says, look, you know, smaller backs can do it too. Okay. You know, I understand that because, you know, you can just watch some of these games, and I've been rewatching a lot of the games on Game Pass. Cause like I said, I'm sick of rewatching everything on Netflix and Hulu and all that stuff. I'm rewatching the football games from last year, and you can see, you know, the score pops up before I watch the game. So I know, you know, how many points are scored, and I'm sitting there going, it's 10-7 at halftime. Like, where do all these points come from? They all come in the third and fourth quarter because the defenses are gassed by that.
Yes. Point.
So that is okay. But saying that bigger backs don't, I mean, tell Boston College had their whole offense based on that last year with A.J. Dillon and David Bailey. So,
yeah, I mean, I've seen it too many times. And you're right. It might be a result of the overall tiredness. But the bottom line is no one wants a 240-pound back in the fourth quarter. They just don't want it.
No, and why would you? But how about so we've got Dalvin Cook over Derrick Henry, and our guy Toft, who is here with us, is a big Minnesota fan. So he is very excited. He's like, I knew I liked Lob. what about let's go a couple of potential round wideouts. More guys on the turn, depending on where they're being ranked. But Julio Jones versus Tyreek Hill, Johnny, where are you going in that one in a PPR league?
I'm definitely the contrarian on this. I have Tyreek Hill as my number two wide receiver overall this year. I am all, look it, man. You give me Andy Reid. You give me Patrick Mahomes. You give me that speed. If he stays on the field for 16 games, and remember, he missed four games last year, and his numbers were outstanding. I love Tyreek Hill. I'm drafting him on the turn. If I'm at 11 and 12, I have no doubt in my mind that I love taking Tyreek Hill, especially in the beginning of the second round. Now, I like Julio Jones, but the big receivers at his age, and I get it, he's one of the greatest I've ever seen, they can fall off the map in a heartbeat. They also do have other weapons in Atlanta. Tyreek Hill is the guy in Kansas City. While Julio is the guy, they're going to spread the ball around, I believe, more in Atlanta. The game goes through two people, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Sammy Watkins, Mecole Hardman, please. Tyreek Hill's going to be peppered all day long. I love him. He's the guy.
So you've got Tyreek over not just Julio, but Devontae Adams and Hopkins as well.
Yes, he's my number two. I love him. I think he's going to get like 1,500 yards this year, like 88 receptions, 94 receptions.
All right. I mean, I like Tyreek too, but I'm not going to go that hard for him. what about Kenyon Drake versus Miles Sanders? This seems to be one where, a lot of people are in camps here. A lot of people are in on Miles Sanders. A lot of people are in on Kenyon Drake. I've seen Kenyon Drake ranked as high as like the third running back on some people's list here. So
that's bullish.
That is bullish. I mean, on Fantasy Pros, it looks like his best is sixth. Or I guess that's overall. That's not among running backs. Let me look at just running backs here on Fantasy Pros. But Fantasy Pros, Kenyon Drake, his highest is five. So maybe I'm getting him mistaken, but I'm pretty sure I saw someone take him as the third running back off the board in a mock that I saw. But, I'm not sourcing it correctly, so who knows. But Miles Sanders versus Kenyon Drake, I'm curious of your take on those two guys.
I like both, but I love Miles Sanders.
Okay.
I am taking a leap of faith that the coach Peterson changes the system a little bit, understands how well Miles Sanders played down the stretch. And he says to himself, I need to give Miles Sanders 65 to 70% of the snaps / work, the share in the backfield. I understand that I'm taking that leap of faith, but I do believe that Miles Sanders is so good that he's, I think I have him at number 7 at running backs and Drake at number 11. And I like Drake. I have a lot of shares. I just took him in the Scott Fishbowl in the second round. I like Drake, but I like Sanders better.
Okay. I'm a Drake guy. Now, I've been on the Drake bandwagon for a little bit here. And the reason is, look, I know that and Jake Seeley came on the ITL CFF or ITL Fantasy Football podcast and talked about, you know, look, you know, Drake's numbers are really skewed in Arizona because he had two huge games there. I understand that. But I think you get a second year of Kyler Murray. You add DeAndre Hopkins, so you're going to see less men in the box. So I think that the potential for Kenyon Drake this year is through the roof. And I've always been a fan, but he was clearly hampered by Miami's offense and was so much better with the Cardinals. And I love Miles Sanders. And to be honest, I think Sanders is the better back between the two. But I think Doug Peterson has a history of, you know, Mixon and Boston Scott, who he likes. There's rumblings of Devontae Freeman getting visits and adding another back there. So I'm just, you know, Chase Edmonds is not what Boston Scott even is in Philly. So I have been a Kenyon Drake guy. Josh Jacobs versus Aaron Jones, Johnny, what are you doing with these two? Because Jones, one of the top performers last year, but a lot of his points came from touchdowns, and we expect a decent amount of touchdown regression from him.
This is a hard one, but as the offseason has advanced, I have moved Aaron Jones up in my rankings. The narrative in January and February is regression, regression, regression. Okay, I get it. He's not going to score 18 touchdowns. I get it. Can he score 12 in that Green Bay offense? Absolutely. I love the value of Aaron Jones. I'm getting him in the second round. I've teamed him up with Nick Chubb and Aaron Jones. I have Miles Sanders and Aaron Jones. I find myself taking Jones, and I have him ranked higher because I believe the ceiling for Aaron Jones is still higher than the ceiling of Josh Jacobs. Now, I'll say this. The floor is there for Aaron Jones, but they have no reason but not to run the wheels off of Aaron Jones. He's a free agent.
Yeah.
Why would you not just run him until he can't run anymore? They already drafted A.J. Dillon for the next year. I found myself getting tons of shares. I think I have Jones at number 8 or 9 now on my list. So I'm going Jones here.
Yeah, I'm Jones over Jacobs as well. And I not only do I have – they're separated by one spot, but in my tiers, I have Jacobs in a different tier.
So he's the first in the next tier.
Yeah, yeah. So there is a sizable gap to me between these two guys. But I'm with you. I don't fear A.J. Dillon as much as a lot of people do. I understand that it's within the realm of possibility that A.J. Dillon becomes a goal line back and not only takes, you know, the expected regression, but more off of Aaron Jones. But I still like the offense better in Green Bay than I do in Vegas. So,
well, that's a whole, I agree with that, too.
One more before we go to break here. Juju Smith-Schuster versus DJ Moore. I love this one because I like both of these guys a lot. And, you know, I think we expect a little regression from Moore, but we expect Juju to take a step up. So where are you on those two guys?
This one, I saw you when you sent me this list. I had to think about it a lot. So I go back to my rankings. I have DJ Moore ranked higher, and I like Juju a ton. But this is one of the reasons why I think the Steelers are going to be conservative on offense, protect the older Ben Roethlisberger, run the football a lot. I like DJ Moore because the game script, the Panthers, I don't think are going to be very good. So I think they're going to be throwing a lot in the fourth quarter, which is garbage time production. So I'm going DJ Moore here.
You know, I'm going Juju, but I agree with you. And you're the only other one I've heard so far say that you think that the Steelers are going to go conservative, because why wouldn't they?
With that 38.
Defense, well, not just 38, but the defense was so good.
So good.
Run the ball. But this is what I like is Juju is one of the leaders in yak. So if we're getting shorter passes to Juju, he can turn it upfield, and he has 297-yard touchdowns already in a short career. So he can get a lot of yak. So I'm excited about Juju and playing, you know, being healthy and playing with Ben as opposed to being banged up and playing with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph. It makes a huge difference. But we do have to hit another break. But We've got some more player debates coming up on the other side. There's some good ones in here, too. So stick with us. It's In This League on the Sports Grid, and we will be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
In This League.
I thought we were going to be just friends.
What? Friends listen to
In This League.
In the dark.
Welcome back. It's Endless Love Time. You guys know what that means. It is the end of the show, the end of hour three with myself and John Lobb. Please, if you would, check us out on the Twitter at Bogman Sports for me, at Gridirons Call 91 for John. And if you would, please check out the In This League Patreon, patreon.com/ITL Army. We've got all kinds of lists for you. You know, I've got CFF up there. We don't know if they're going to play, you know, immediately, but I do have a CFF list made. But I've got PPR, I've got Superflex, I've got half point rankings, I've got rookie draft rankings. We do secret shows twice a month. And if you bump up from 5 to 10, we got group me rooms for whatever sport you want. $20 will get you into all the group me rooms that we have, which include all kinds of stuff, not even outside of sports as well. So it's worth your money, it's worth your investment, and we would really appreciate it. It's the backbone of In This League, and it's what keeps us ticking on a day-to-day basis. But Johnny, what's going on in your world? What do you have coming up, and where can we find all your work and articles and things like that?
Sure. So right now this week I'm working on college football wide receivers profiles, and those are going to pop up on Fantrax next Monday. In the last 2 weeks, I've put up the quarterbacks, the top 24 quarterbacks with profiles, and then this Monday, top 24 running back profiles. So that's where my college fantasy football stuff is going up right now. Once I'm done with the college fantasy football stuff, I kind of go back to NFL stuff on Football Diehards. And so you can find all my written work on those two sites. And then I have one other new project. I'm doing a draft Devi seminar series on DynastyDraftRoom.com. And so far we've analyzed 32 players for Devi leagues from quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers. That's the other thing I'm working on right now.
That's awesome, man. And of course you can catch us on Fantrax. College fantasy football on campus every week. Usually that comes out on Thursday. So we're doing player debates here, John, going into the break, and we got some good ones. We differ on a couple here. We're both Dalvin Cook over Derrick Henry. I'm Julio. You're Tyreek Hill. I do have them very close, but you're really bullish on Tyreek. Your team, Miles Sanders. I'm team Kenyon Drake. We're both Aaron Jones over Josh Jacobs, and you're DJ Moore, and I'm Juju Smith-Schuster. So this next one is very interesting to me, and I feel like there's a little bit of judgment in my mind depending on who you're going to pick here. And it's Robert Woods versus Keenan Allen, and I won't sway you. I won't let you know either way which one I'm in on. So what are you thinking between these two wideouts, John?
So before I answer that, I have to digress, and this is going to give you an answer to the question. Last year in a dynasty league, an owner wanted OBJ from me really bad. Odell. Yeah. So I said, give me Robert Woods, T.Y. Hilton, and a second-round pick. And he did. And I got chastised for making the trade. People thought I was stone-cold crazy. So the trades actually worked out. So I can't realize. So – you know, I really like it. So I'm a Robert Woods.
Have you spent that second round pick already?
I did. And I was just trying. I think it's Michael Pittman Jr. I believe I took Michael Pittman Jr. in this league. So I'm willing to trade lots of superstars for assets. I have no problem with that. Now, hey, Odell might be great this year, but I'm very happy with the trade. So, and people were like, I had a poll, 90% were like, you're out of your mind to make the trade. So I do like Robert Woods. But in this battle, and I've been a Keenan Allen fan, and I had Keenan Allen College Fantasy Football League when he was a Cal. So I've been watching him play a long time. But to me, it comes down to the quarterbacks. While I'm not the biggest Jared Goff fan, he is at least a productive fantasy quarterback who gets the ball into his playmakers' hands most of the time. I can't bank on Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert to pepper Keenan Allen-like targets like Phillip Rivers did. So I'm on Robert Woods.
I am also on Robert Woods' side here. And it's funny, we just did the episode over on the ITL Fantasy Football Podcast. And one of the most interesting facts that we read off, and we interviewed your buddy Bob Harris for that show. That was it's a great show. And one of the wide receiver facts that I really liked was that Robert Woods has outperformed his ADP in the last 7 straight years. So this year was really close because he was ranked 15, but he finished at 14 overall. So yeah, he's just one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, and people do not respect him like that. Keenan Allen did it by himself for so long, and you know, look, Keenan Allen might be the better wide receiver between the two as far as skill goes, but like you mentioned, doesn't have the quarterback, and he's had injury issues pretty much his entire career. So I am absolutely a Robert Woods fan, and he'll be used on a trick play here or there too. And
he does.
We're going to see positive touchdown regression from Robert Woods because he only scored twice on receptions last year, too. And I think one rushing touchdown too. Like I said, trick plays.
So he should easily score 7 to 8. Like that's not even expecting a lot.
And Keenan Allen only had 6 last year too. So if you can get up to that same range, I think Robert Woods is going to be extremely valuable this year. So I like that. We're both team Robert Woods on that one. What about this one? I like a lot too, because I don't know, man, you know, Melvin Gordon versus Lev Bell. I know a lot of people are down on both these backs. You have Lev Bell, who's really good, but playing for Adam Gase. Melvin Gordon goes from a situation where, you know, in LA with Austin Eckler. Eckler is probably the better back, to be honest. Melvin Gordon's still really good, but I have seen some people saying that Philip Lindsay is better than Melvin Gordon. I don't know if I agree with that. I think they're both very good, but you know, you can't, as far in terms of fantasy, you have to understand that Philip Lindsay has had this wrist injury for like 2 years. So that has to be something. I know Melvin Gordon hasn't been, you know, hasn't been the most healthy player in the world over his NFL career. But where do you sit on Melvin Gordon versus Lev Bell? Because they're very, very similar.
So you might notice, anyone watching us on video, I have a Broncos t-shirt on and a Broncos blanket over my couch. But, and I like Gordon, and I think it was a good signing. I'm taking Le'Veon Bell in this. Here's why. Here's the Jets depth chart. Le'Veon Bell, Frank Gore, LaMichael Perine, Kenneth Dixon. I just found out they had Kenneth Dixon the other day. Josh Adams. There is literally no legitimate competition in the backfield for Le'Veon Bell. Now, I worry about this because you have the Adam Gase factor. He is chaos, and he is destructive for running backs. But I have to assume the man wants a job in 2021. And to me, the best way to get the job is to give the ball to Bell. So I'm going to go Bell in this argument. And then the other thing, Lindsay is a back-to-back 1,000-yard rusher. He's a competent NFL back. They're going to use Gordon sparingly. They're going to be smart with him. In blowouts, Lindsay's going to play. And if they're playing catch-up in the fourth quarter, Lindsay's going to be the pass-catching back. So there are reasons to sit Gordon on the sideline for the Denver coaching staff. There is no legitimate argument to take Lev Bell off the field in New York.
Yeah, and you know, I actually just went in and adjusted because I have my initial rankings. I had Gordon just slightly over Bell, and honestly, it's because of my Adam Gase hatred.
I totally understand.
Yeah, yeah. So you get it. So I don't like the way he's being used. I think if we were to ratchet this back to half PPR, I think I would go Melvin Gordon over Lev Bell. Lev Bell loses a decent amount because of the reception.
Yes, because his receptions are out of control.
Right, they're that close to me. But because I think there's a possibility of Lev Bell leading this team in catches for the Jets. I mean, I think it's going to be Crowder, but if anything happened to Crowder, it would definitely be Lev Bell, I think, over Perriman or Denzel Mims or anybody else there, you know, Chris Herndon, that I would go with Lev Bell. So he's just too complete. I think he's going to be used as a wide receiver three there as well. So I got to go with Lev Bell, and I see myself doing it in the mocks that we do at ITL as well. I, you know, with both sitting there, I take Bell, so I have to reflect that in my rankings. Devontae Parker versus Terry McLaurin in a PPR league. Now, some people are rolling their eyes at this, but I think as far as Fantasy Pros ranks go, that Parker is ahead of McLaurin as far as those ranks. I'm just going to double check here as we're going. But yeah, Parker is 23 and McLaurin is 24. So who are you higher on, John?
For the season, I'm going Devontae Parker. And here I have him ranked higher. And to me, it comes down to the quarterback. I trust Ryan Fitzpatrick. And if Tua gets in the game, and we'll see. But Fitzpatrick will pepper Parker. I like that. Pepper Parker. He will. I hope Dwayne Haskins makes it. I have not given up on Dwayne Haskins. You can't make a decision in six games at the end of his rookie year. But if I'm betting on the quarterback to be more productive, I've got to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Devontae Parker. And to me, that's the difference between these two players.
So, and it's funny because I asked Bob Harris this as well. And Dwayne Haskins does have a rapport built with McLaurin because they played together at Ohio State too. So are you factoring that in, or am I just kind of bringing up this point to you now?
No. We know he likes him at Ohio State, but here's the thing.
Of course.
The NFL is faster, swifter. Yep. And is he ready for that level of competition? We know for all his faults, Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to get the ball out of his hands. I mean, he has lots of faults, but you know what? The guy competes and has made a great career for himself.
All right. So we've got two more here. Cam Akers versus James White, John. What are you doing with those two guys? And a PPR, too, which, of course, is where James White holds most of his value.
This one's the hardest one you gave me. I'm going to go Cam Akers because of the upside potential in the Rams offense. I don't know if James White, between Cam Newton and Jared Stidham, are they going to pepper James White with 100 targets like Tom Brady did? I don't know that answer. If Cam Akers wins the job for the Rams and he's the goal line guy, we know how good Todd Gurley was in that Rams offense. So I'm going ceiling here with Cam Akers.
Yeah, and I've got James White ahead, but I think this really depends because we're moving down into this section of it depends on what you've already drafted. If you've taken upside, then you probably want to go James White for the floor. If you've taken floor, you probably want to go Cam Akers for the upside. So it does depend on your roster construction. But in general, I think I'm going to go James White because I think Cam Newton can throw the ball to him. He got used to throwing the CMC, obviously. So I think that he can use him as an outlet. And the last one I have is, this is a little upside versus floor as well, but a lot of people are loving what they saw out of Deontay Johnson with Pittsburgh last year. Versus a guy that we talked about a little bit before in Jamison Crowder, who is a PPR magnet. So this is kind of upside versus ceiling play here, John. Where are you going, Deontay Johnson versus Jamison Crowder?
So first, Scott, I'll never forgive you for making me choose two Adam Gase players in one segment. So for that, I'm upset, but let's move on from there, okay? So again, I'm going to go here with Price. Deontay Johnson's very pricey right now. Very pricey. Jamison Crowder's for free. No one wants the Jets wide receiver right now, which I understand. I do believe that you mentioned Bell could be the number one receiver. Could be. We don't know yet. But Jamison Crowder, if he's on the field for all 16 games, they have Denzel Mims. They have Breshad Perriman. But Gase does throw the football to the slot receiver. And that's where Jamison Crowder excels.
And
Well,
I just wanted to say that I didn't realize the ADP was so far different between these guys.
Because
they're ranked 38 and 39 in Fantasy Pros. But as far as ADP among wideouts go, Deontay Johnson is going at 39 and Crowder's going at 50. So almost a full round later of just wideouts.
Yeah, I love the price of Jamison Crowder. If he's healthy, he's going to get 110 targets in New York. And I mean, in a 12th round or 11th round, right? I mean, that to me is great. And the thing is, Johnson's got Juju, who you just mentioned how much. You still got James Conner. You got Anthony McFarland. You got a boatload of tight ends.
Claypool.
And Claypool and James Washington. I like Johnson, but he's costly.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I've got Crowder ahead of Deontay Johnson as well. And look, I was a Deontay Johnson fan coming into the draft. I was super excited that my Steelers drafted him as well. Yeah. I think he is going to be a stud. But for this year, Crowder is just, he's the number one. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we mentioned good team versus bad team before. You know, the Jets are going to be playing a lot of garbage ball in the fourth quarter this year. I think they're only projected to win like five games. So, you know, we'll see as far as that goes. But we got to take off here. I hope you guys enjoyed In This League on the Sports Grid. For those of you wondering about Casey Bubba, as we're recording this, no baby yet, but the baby is on the way, which is why John is here with us. And you can follow him on the Twitter at GridironSkull91. You can follow me at Bogman Sports. You can follow Bubba at BDAntric. And you can follow the Welsh at Is It The Welsh. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. We will see you guys next week. John is coming back next week. We'll do more player debates and get an update on our drafts and the Scott Fishbowl. So we will see you guys then. Take it easy, everybody.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.